Hello, and welcome back to season two of Visiting Dugout, a Fans First Sports Network production. If you're new here, I'm Crystal O'Keefe, podcaster, managing editor, writer, everything for Southside Sox. And today I have a returning guest, Wick. He's back to discuss the Reds. So welcome back. Please reintroduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm Wick Terrell. I'm the managing editor and, again, kind of do it all over at redreporter.com as well. At one time, I hosted the Fans First Sports Network Walks Will Haunt podcast for Red Reporter as well. It was telling Crystal a minute ago. My wife and I had a baby who is just now about 10 months old. So I've kind of tapped pause on the podcasting aspect of things over the last year or so. I hope to get back into it again once I get a little bit more sleep and have a little bit more time in the evenings. I'm super, super glad to be back and glad baseball is back up and going again. And that the Reds are hopefully, knock on everything, going to make this a season that's worth talking about more often.
Yeah, I do notice your little title there. It just says big fan of Ellie De La Cruz. And honestly, at this point, who is not? He is so much fun.
Yeah, he just hit another home run, like literally right before I opened up the page to jump in here. So after a little bit of a slow start to the season, I mean, it's still the start of the season. The last week or so of what he's put on display has been, I think, everything that we really hoped for when we saw him first come up last year. Before the struggles at the end of the year, he's made adjustments and, the Reds, well, I can't say the Reds have had injuries when I'm talking to the White Sox here, because good Lord, what they've gone through has been just disastrous. But the Reds were supposed to have TJ Friedl and Matt McClain, their two leaders in WAR from last year. Noel V. Marte, who was a tremendous rookie, got tapped with an 80-game suspension to start the year. A lot of the spotlight kind of fell on Ellie, more so than I think we all hoped it would. And he's been able to kind of step up and fill that a little bit more over the last week or so.
Yeah, he's definitely a blast. I know I went to a White Sox-Reds game last year in Cincinnati, and he was playing, and I was just – I mean, there was no Joey Votto at that game, but I was just excited to see Ellie because I was like, this is the kid that I've been like waiting to see for the longest time now. But other than that, what else is new in Cincinnati?
New in Cincinnati. So Frankie Montas is now a part of the rotation and hopefully over the shoulder issues that basically shut him down all of last year. The Reds spent some money this winter, which is not something they really do a lot of. They didn't throw it all at one player. They were reportedly in on Sonny Gray before he signed in St. Louis. Obviously, somebody they're familiar with and somebody they knew would cost a lot of money. So they were prepared to spend a lot of money on one person. And when that didn't work out, it seemed like they kind of pivoted. So they've got money with Emilio Pagan, with Nick Martinez. They signed Brent Suter. But it was kind of when they made the signing of Frankie a little bit late into the offseason that things kind of began to make a little bit more sense about what it was that they've been doing. John Candelario obviously is the big position player signing that they made earlier in the year. But Frankie, it was pretty clear that they knew they needed to address their starting rotation and their bullpen, which they did with the other pieces out there. But he's the guy that was, they didn't sign him to be a mid-rotation guy. They signed him to be a front-of-the-line guy for a rotation that really had a lot of struggles last year. They had a lot of guys that were injured too. I mean, they don't lack for talent there. It's just a bunch of guys who've never gotten more than barely 100 innings because they've all ended up on the 60-day injured list over the last 2 years. And so to trust in him coming off that injury to be the stabilizing force was a little bit of a gamble. It was a big time gamble. He got knocked around a little bit yesterday. His defense, which has kind of been the poor calling card of this team so far, didn't exactly help him out. But through three starts, he's been everything that the Reds would hope he would be. And that's been a perk. Hunter Green got knocked around a little bit tonight. So the Reds are still trying to sort their rotation out. Nick Lodolo is going to be back for the Chicago series this weekend. And is a guy who missed, who was basically a lost season last year as well. But what's new is the Reds they're still trying a bunch of new players. They really are. They've been forced to kind of mix and match. A lot of talented guys, a lot of guys who are high draft picks, a lot of guys who they're hoping turn out, but very little proven anything anywhere. So if Frankie can front the rotation the way that they hope he can, that'll at least give them one kind of stalwart, at least somewhere on this active roster.
Yeah, we have zero of those right now. We have our previous bullpen closer guy as our new starting ace. So it's going to be an interesting season.
Yeah. Been through a lot of those the last couple of years. I can empathize with that.
Yeah. So what is it like to no longer have that veteran presence of Joey Votto?
I think I knew it at the time. And for a while, I kind of told myself, but then it's been so long that I kind of forgot that I really got into writing about baseball because of Joey Votto. Because he's been around, he was in, the Reds organization for what, 21 years after he got drafted. I kind of started writing late 2008, I think, and kind of picked up as a writer on Red Reporters or like 2010, 2011 ish, right after he won MVP. In part because he wasn't just a good baseball player, but he was the sabermetric darling for a team that didn't buy into sabermetrics at that time. And it's like, they gave him this gigantic extension and he's the dream of so many people that have studied baseball, but you're a front office that doesn't believe any of that crap. So where's the disconnect there? So he was always this awesome fit for Reds fans that didn't really get appreciated as much by a lot of Reds fans as I think he should have over the course of most of his career. But just an amazing baseball player and, obviously fell into the injury bug over the last few years. I'm about his same age. I can tell you how much things get hurt when you turn 37, 38 years old.
Yeah.
But before that, he was one of the absolute best baseball players of his generation. And it's one part that he's not there. And it's another part that they didn't really fill the Joey Votto void with somebody else who had been there. And so, for the longest time, when you went into a Red season and you knew that they were rebuilding, because let's face it, the last 10 years, they've basically just been rebuilding. At least you had one known quantity. You had one, the battleship in the lineup that you could kind of build everything else around. That's not there. And it was a really, really weird winter trying to, prep for the upcoming Red season when you literally knew nothing about any of the other players. But on top of that, he's an incredible character and one of the best voices of the baseball world. And I am really hoping that just one freak sprained ankle in the dugout of the Blue Jays spring training facility is not something that sets back his chance to really get back to the big leagues and perform again this year. Cause if that shoulder's healthy, I think he's got a little bit left in the tank still. And I know he's itching to show that.
Oh, for sure. And the other thing about him, he's just so likable. Like he's one of the players, there are a handful of those players that you can't say any bad things about. Like, he's just a fun guy. He's been that great veteran. His tweets and Instagram reels during the offseason before the Blue Jays picked him up were great.
Tremendous. It made me feel so bad. So bad. The line from the front office was that there just weren't going to be enough plate appearances for him. And then I just immediately start reeling off all the players that the Reds have had hurt since he signed elsewhere. And it's like, couldn't have brought him into camp and at least like waited it out. But yeah, I digress. I'm happy for him that he's got an opportunity with the hometown Blue Jays. And I do think that obviously it's not going to be for 162 games, but he'll get healthy working his way back and he will find a way to make an impact on what's supposed to be a pretty dang good Blue Jays team. So I'm happy he fell into a better situation than how it ended with the Reds.
Yeah, for sure. So with all of that, how would you grade this off season?
With the benefit of hindsight, I'd say great. I mean, Candelario obviously hasn't taken off just yet, but the kind of the narrative going into the winter was that the Reds had so many infielders, what the hell are they going to do with them all? And then they signed him for 3 years and $45 million guaranteed. And you're like, what? But then Noelvi Marte suspended. Edwin Arroyo, who their top infield prospect, tore a labrum, is out for the year. Matt McClain tore a labrum and is hopefully going to be back in August, maybe. But that's a big, big maybe. He had oblique issues that ended his year last year that he had again in spring training this year. So it's basically going to be a year that he's out by the time he does get back. So they they overloaded on one position that didn't necessarily seem like it needed to be, but now looks like it's going to be a big, big perk to have. They're trusting Spencer Steer to move into left field full time, even though he's been almost all the year last year on the infield. Mm-hmm. His bat certainly has not slept on that. He's been one of the three best hitters in baseball to start this season after being their best hitter overall last year. So I think they've really found kind of a diamond in the rough there. Never a top 100 prospect, always a well considered prospect, but never, you know, a top guy who now looks like he's the best hitter in the lineup right now. So that's a huge development of their willingness to kind of move him around to make things else everywhere else fit. That's kind of the crux of their offseason was Spencer Steer can be wherever he needs to be and whoever else we can get around him is going to work. The bullpen still has some issues. They spent a lot of money down there and it hasn't quite gelled just yet. How the pitching shakes out is really going to be where this team goes. They've got a lot of options. When Lodolo gets back, they might have a six-man rotation because they're going to have six guys who are worthy of at least getting the shot there. All of them aren't proven yet. They've all got talent and deserve to, you know, they're better than AAA players at this point, but they got to figure out how to use them. So sorting through all that is going to be kind of how you eventually grade the offseason because they didn't get any sure things, but they certainly did get a lot of depth. And if this Reds team's going to go anywhere, it's because they've got a better 40-man roster than other 40-man rosters and maybe not a better 26-man roster. And so that's the kind of thing that you'll see play out over the course of a 6.5-month season.
Yeah. So with all this depth that they now have, do you feel confident going into this season? I mean, they've looked decent so far.
There's so many, like Christian Encarnacion and Strand look, I mean, he just knocks the crap out of the ball, was the best hitter in AAA the last year and a half. Performed well on a small sample to start last year. He walked for the first time all season tonight in, I think, 55 plate appearances. So they're asking for a lot of players to kind of mature on the same path and nobody have a plateau year. And I think the thinking was when the season started that you add Friedel and McLean and Marte to the mix and you can afford to have one or two of the guys not have a great year. Now you're looking at Will Benson and saying, you got to be a star in the middle of the lineup. And he's a guy who is very much, you know, by some qualifications, a rookie still last year, and has never hit left-handers and is now suddenly playing every day. It's a lot to ask. It's a whole lot to ask, especially in a division that still has some good teams. I don't think they've got any great teams, but this Milwaukee club's good. They're still going to be good. The Cubs obviously swung big this offseason and getting Craig Counsell and bringing Bellinger back. And those are teams that'll, if they're in the mix, they're going to be active in July too, which the Reds didn't do last year when they were 9 games over .500 and in first place at the deadline. And they basically set it entirely out, which is another fun topic to talk about. But, I think I'm excited about this Reds team, but known quantity wise, I have no idea what to expect. I really don't. And that's, it's a weird thing to wrap my head around that they're supposed to be good, but you don't know which one of them are supposed to be good yet. So I'll have a little bit more opinion about this once we get into May and I've got more than, a week of stormy April weather to kind of base it on. But, I will say this, like there's a lot of talent there. There really is a lot of talent there. And if they can, form at least a little bit of it at the same time, it could be as early as this year that things begin to get special.
Yeah, definitely. All right. We're going to take a very quick break to pay some bills and we will be back to break down this series. Here's my awkward YouTube. All right. Welcome back. Let's break down this series with the Reds. We're going to obviously start off with starting pitching. We do finally have some probable pitchers. When I wrote these notes initially, we did not. So for game one, we've got Chris Flexen against Andrew Abbott. Then Garrett Crochet against Nick Lodolo, who you were just talking about is going to finally be back. And then the last game, Michael Soroka against Graham Ashcroft. So we have one phenomenal pitcher in that, and then two that are very hit or miss. And I know you've mentioned, you know, how you're not sure how Nick is going to come back, but how do you feel about at least the other two?
Yeah. Well, for one, I don't I know they're probable pitchers listed for now, but I don't know exactly what the Reds are going to do. So I know Nick Lodolo is going to pitch, and he's going to pitch the second game of the series. If they don't go to a six-man rotation, there's a chance one of Abbott or Ashcraft actually gets optioned to get Nick back on the roster, because they're two of the guys that actually have options on the pitching staff. And I mentioned they've augmented the bullpen in the rotation. They've got a lot of guys they didn't spend a ton of money on, but they gave guaranteed money to in that 13-man pitching staff that they're not going to option and they're not going to cut this early in the year. So you start looking up at the guys who have options, and it's Hunter Green and it's Alexis Diaz, who they obviously aren't going to option either of those two guys. And then you get to like Abbott and you get to Ashcraft, and you're like, wait, those two guys are supposed to be part of the rotation. What are you going to do? So unless they get Fernando Cruz out of the bullpen, he's been really good this year. I'm not sure exactly how they're going to juggle this. So for now, it's Abbott, Lodolo, or Ashcraft. Put an asterisk on that, because there might be a little bit of a tweak to that between now and the end of the series. Long story short, three guys who have great stuff. I mean, Lodolo was, I think, the sixth of the seventh overall draft pick about 5 years ago. Really had a breakout rookie year. And then last year, dealt with a tibia stress fracture that they kind of misdiagnosed and kept trying to bring him back, and he kept having pain and shutting him down. And so just a broken season. Finally figured out what it was. It took a lot longer to get over than they wanted to. But when he's right, he's got the best stuff on the staff. And I say that with Hunter Green having what he has. Mm-hmm. Nick Lodolo pitches better. He's got so much more movement. He's a 6'6", lanky lefty. He's got Chris Sale. No lie. He's got Chris Sale stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to see how well he gets back into action, because he throws strikes better than anybody the Reds have. And you pair that with his out pitches, and when he's healthy, he's there's a reason why he was drafted as high as he was. So that, you know, I talk about pitching might be what defines the Red season, how healthy he is. And if he can pick up where he left off in 2022, they've got a number one starter right there. So he's the big guy I'm watching in this particular series. The other two guys have great stuff. Graham Ashcraft throws 100 miles an hour, and it's a bowling ball. He gets a lot of ground balls. He's tweaking himself with some new pitches. Didn't go so well for him his last start out, but he has been a Jekyll and Hyde guy, where, like, you look at his last year in 10, 12 starts in a row, he's unhittable, one of the three or four best pitchers in the league. Then he's got an 8-start window where he gives up, like, I don't even know what it was. I'm throwing numbers out that aren't right, but it was like 43 earned runs and 38 innings pitched. And you're like, okay, how? He's got incredible stuff. Spent time on the 68 injured list last year also, came back and looks like he's healthy again. If he is, whole lot of upside there. So I'm hoping he can kind of get back on track after a rough start. And then Andrew Abbott was the best pitcher the Reds had for a month and a half, middle of last year, when they were making their surprise push towards maybe a wild card spot. Second round pick out of Virginia, a guy who was a closer in college and didn't really have a whole lot of pedigree, but then all of a sudden they moved him to a starter and he just kind of kept getting a lot of guys out. A lefty who pitches inside to righties perhaps better than any lefty I've seen on the Reds in the last couple of years. A lot of kind of Wade Miley with like an extra 3 miles an hour on his fastball almost is kind of what he reminds me of. So when he's on, he's tremendous. And again, a whole lot of potential here, but not a whole lot of track record from any of these guys. And so I'm hoping that it's not just flash in the pan that we see from them, but they're starting to build consistency into where this is who they are and not what they are every now and then. But there's a chance. I like all three guys because they've got that upside. None of them have been able to put it together over the course of an entire season yet. So I'm hoping that it's this year.
Yeah. So it sounds like Abbott is the kind of reverse Garrett Crochet, though, because Garrett's, you know, wasn't a starter in high school and had played like six, he maybe had like six starts since then, and he has been able to come in. And again, people have also compared him to Chris Sale. You know, he's very tall, lanky lefty as well. Like that's the one gene that you just would love to clone, so everyone that arm on their team.
I have no idea how it holds itself together, but it has more often than not, and it's got amazing action. Yeah,
and he bounces back from injuries and dominates again. I'm trying to think of how old he is. 35 years old.
35, yeah, that sounds about right, yep.
Constantly coming back from injury and still just managing to dominate. no matter what.
And hasn't put on a pound since he was 18 years old. That's how he did that. I have no idea.
Your guess is as good as mine, because yeah, he is one of the lankiest people I've ever seen. Oh, but you gotta love him, even though he's a little crazy. You gotta love him.
Little crazy. You got to have a little crazy to be a good starting pitcher, I think. I think it's the only way you get through 6 months of doing that.
I actually was just talking about all of these injuries that have been happening to these pitchers and every single player on the White Sox, it seems like. And I brought up in our Slack, I was like, we had the likes of crazy Matt Albers and like Bartolo Colon pitching and staying healthy and not having these issues. And then you've got, people getting injured running to first base. And I'm like, how do you go from Matt Albers screaming as he's throwing the ball and then Yoan Moncada getting injured running to first? It's
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned some old pitchers that just never got hurt and were just out there every single day. And we also just talked about lanky guys. Bronson Arroyo's who popped in my head, who 6'5" and I don't know, 175 pounds maybe, and threw from different arm angles and had a reported like a 12 pitch arsenal at one point, throwing 240 innings a year, and just the dude never got hurt. Never once got hurt, ever. And it's I don't know what it's become, if it's just become such a max effort sport, both running and swinging, and then the preparation to do that too. If you're having to absolutely max effort yourself to get your body in shape to be able to contend against 100 mile an hour fastballs or 115 mile an hour exit velocities. If you've just reached yourself to where you're in almost two prime form, and it's the breaking point. I don't know, but it certainly seems like guys who are, I mean, you look at them, they're in pristine shape and prime form with as much prep work as possible, breaking down. It's breaking down. It's what it is that there's too much stress on them. But as a lot of the coaches and agents and trainers have mentioned, if you don't put yourself through that, you're not going to be good enough to get signed. And I don't know what to tell players that have the chance to make the kind of life-changing money they're making, to not want to do that. I don't know what the answer is, but the system itself has certainly put itself where players are buying into the concept of, I'm going to get hurt every third year at least. But if I'm healthy for two of those, I'm going to make enough money to retire and keep my family straight. And it's the football mentality, which is kind of what it's become. And that's not something I ever thought I would really deal with covering in baseball, but it's kind of what it is. And it's heart-wrenching. Like I watched TJ Antone last week come in and throw one pitch and just immediately motion to the trainers. And he's had two Tommy John surgeries since 2018. Apparently his flexor tendon popped completely off the bone, and he's going back for a third major elbow surgery, and he's obviously not excited about it, but he's taking it on as a challenge because he's been through it twice before. He knows exactly what he's up against. And is determined to come back better than he did last time because of it. And I sure as hell hope he does, because he's one of the more admirable players in the Reds organization. But like, I can't imagine being tasked with going through that as often as he's gone through. It's really tough to think about.
That's like with Jake Berger, tore his ACL twice and has PTSD from doing this. Great mental health advocate. And then he can go out and hit 30 home runs in a season. So I think what really needs to happen, I mean, you've got like the Pete Alonsos who can hit the ball and be amazing and stay healthy. You've got April, 2022 was 20, I don't know, but you've got the Yermín Mercedes 1 month of glory. And then you've got this Jake Berger. So I think, and then again, Matt Albers, Bartolo Colon, we've got like this dad bod thing that needs to come back for these players. And that's what's going to keep them healthy. Like they just need to, I don't know. not stay as in shape, not be too high strung and too overworked. So
yeah, the Spencer Strider. Yeah, it's so tough because, you know, when you get hurt like that, it's not it's a year minimum. It's a year and a half, really. And it's such a long time in a sport where you see these players every single day. You know, you get hurt in football and yeah, you miss the last 7-8 games of a season. And then by the time the next season starts, you're back. And in every single day sport, it's just such a loss when there's these big names and big stars and big personalities. Even the pitchers obviously don't pitch every single day, but they're there. They're part of the team. They're part of the dugout. They're part of each series. Is that it's very tough for the sport to explain its way around why so many big stars aren't there, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Oh, we got a little off topic there. It's fine though. What could be the biggest threat to this very sad White Sox team right now? This could be, you know, a player, just someone dominating, a pitcher, any of that really.
I'm going to say the bullpen because I want it to be the bullpen. The Reds, they forked out money for what, 4 separate guys in free agency down there. I mean, if you factor Nick Martinez in there, who I think will end up moving to the bullpen if Lodolo comes back and is fully healthy. Emilio Pagan signed a couple years and $16 million. Brent Suter signed for a couple years and guaranteed $4 or $5 million as well. Buck Farmer, they brought back in free agency as well. They clearly thought they needed to address that spot with multiple arms and put their money where their mouth was. And I think you don't do that if you expect it to just like shore up that unit. That you spend money on that many guys because you think we need our bullpen to be a top tier bullpen. And they haven't looked it yet. And it's obviously still super, super early. But until that bullpen begins to kind of find its groove and finds who pitches where, that's who I'm going to be looking at to step up because, you know, you didn't sign 4 infielders. I'm not looking for the middle of the lineup to step up because you signed 4 guys there. You signed these guys to basically be the entire unit in front of Alexis Diaz. It's time to start showing it. And some of them have to an extent. Again, obviously still super, super early, but I want to see how they shake out and how David Bell uses them because if they're going to get places, especially with the young pitching staff that doesn't have a whole lot of innings, you're going to depend on those veteran guys to get you, you know, 65, 70 innings out of the bullpen and sort out who pitches where. Sooner the better. I would love to find out who I'm supposed to be expecting and in which inning down there.
So would you say the bullpen kind of hold the key to taking this series or – are there other things that the Reds really need to do to take this series?
The Reds came in today leading baseball in steals, and they led the game in steals last year as well as a team. I think Ellie's on pace to steal 90 bases this year in short sample size, small sample size rather. Losing some of the guys they did puts a little bit of a dent in things. TJ Friedl, I think, was poised to steal 35, 40 bases this year. But their ability to get on base is what they're still working on because when they do, they run better than anybody else. And it's not just stealing bases. It's first to third. They're super aggressive on sac flies. I think they tagged up and took second base on fly balls twice already in this Brewer series. So they're still working on the whole walk rate thing. That's below par, middle of the pack right now. But when they get on, it's a havoc inducing team and they've emphasized making sure they've got speed everywhere. So that to me is hopefully how this series goes, because if they can get to first, it's going to be a very entertaining series because they will try, and getting thrown out once or twice doesn't mean they don't think they can run on the catcher. They're going to try harder. That's who they've become, especially with the new rules and the bigger bases and the limited throws over to first base. They're going to push that envelope. And so I hope that's the story of the series, because all it takes is them getting to first base and it's going to happen.
Well, if Martin Maldonado is catching at all this series, you will have a very easy time any base, doing anything really. So right now, the White Sox, this was pretty wild. We had Gavin Sheets suddenly hitting a lot of home runs, not expected. normally he'd tap out at like five or six. And I think he's already got like five this year. So he's heating up. Garrett Crochet is phenomenal. And my new favorite, Dominic Fletcher, also actually putting in some work. He's been really great offensively. Great plate discipline too. So do you have any fears now that you mentioned these? Do you have any fears heading into this series for this team?
I'll admit, I know about a lot of the White Sox that aren't going to be playing in this series. I'm as interested to find out about a lot of these players more so than what I've just been able to pick in on small stats as well, because I've not watched the White Sox yet this year. So I'm excited to see what they've got, because as you've mentioned, as we both mentioned, they're playing so shorthanded right now. And playing shorthanded was something I think they were prepared to do at the start of this year, especially waiting as late as they did to trade Dylan Cease, but losing what they've lost with losing Eloy and losing Moncada yesterday, losing Lewis for what a while, unfortunately.
The timetable, we're still not positive on what that timetable looks like. Eloy might be back soonish. I don't know. That's been really murky for both of them. But we just finally got the like 3 to 6 months for Moncada, which is probably
Which
the
is
end of his time in the White Sox uniform.
that's so tough. That's so tough. But yeah, admittedly, knew a lot about them. I feel like I knew a lot about Cease because he was connected so much with the Reds over the offseason as well. Know a little bit about Andrew Vaughn, but I just don't know a whole lot about what the White Sox have. And like I said, it's early April. I'm waiting to get caught up on a lot of teams, and I'm excited to get a chance to watch this series, which I will. I'm home. The weather's going to be good. I can sit outside and watch it on the porch. As busy as I've been personally over the first week and a half of the season, this might actually be the first series I get a chance to watch 27 outs 3 times in a row. So hopefully I'll have a lot better opinions about the White Sox after this weekend.
It'll be interesting. We're on
Andrew
spring break.
Benintendi might get a hit.
We've won 2 games at the time of this recording, and it's an off day. So yeah, we've won 2 games this season. Andrew Benintendi is the largest contract in White Sox history, and he's for the first
Cincinnati's own
time.
Andrew, Cincinnati's own Andrew Benintendi, Cincinnati's own Andrew Benintendi,
He finally got a double the other day. Otherwise, he was just abysmal at best. It's really rough for White Sox fans right now. Not a lot of hope.
And it's, I mean, it's one thing to be a frustratingly bad team and also running into injuries, but it's the White Sox, the way they went about business this offseason is something that, as a Reds fan, like I said earlier, I can empathize with. They've spent the better part of 10 years rebuilding and kind of got sort of half-assed started once and then cut that short after one pandemic year. And just so many years just going into March, just knowing that there's not enough there. And that was by design. And that was the whole point. And they were just waiting for better times to sell the players that were still there. And it's so incredibly frustrating how pervasive that's become in Major League Baseball. But yeah, the Reds went through, I've covered a lot of it. I've written for Red Reporter since 2011, I think. And a lot of those years were just, oh God, just trying to figure out how bad it's going to get the next day. So I don't miss those days. And I hope that this is the start of the window where I could actually be more optimistic about things going forward, but it's not fun. It's really not fun.
No, definitely not. All right, we'll move away from this series that is going to just be depressing. I know I have coverage for the first game, and I don't want to watch. So before we leave, just any thoughts on the season in general, not just, for the Reds, just kind of, hot takes, overall thoughts.
I'm very interested to see what Juan Soto does, as the rest of the baseball world is. excuse me, just a perfect fit for that short porch in right field at Yankee Stadium. He's been the best offensive player of this generation, and he's still so freaking young that, you know, the Ohtani contract is what it is with all the deferrals and everything else. And I can't believe it was as big as it was, but also as small as it was, all that jazz. When it comes to guaranteed money up front, I think a season that he puts together that's capable, perfectly capable within his abilities, it could set the market for what the baseball world is going to become. And so he's the one player particularly I'm watching because he's in a platform year on the biggest stage, in a perfect environment to go out and put up a historic season, which I think he's firmly capable of. He's the one player I've got my eyes on perhaps more than any this year. I don't know if it was the Joey Votto bias or not, but I picked the Toronto Blue Jays to be the breakout team when I did my annual five dumb predictions, and I call them dumb for a reason because sometimes they're not very well researched. But that nucleus in Toronto, I swear it's got more in it than it's shown the last 2 years, and they're running short on time to have it play out as good as it possibly can. But I get the feeling that there's just something that's going to be special about that Toronto club this year. And so they're kind of my sleeper pick to be a big, big factor, later in this season. And then the Dodgers are impossible to ignore. I mean, they've got three just slam dunk Hall of Famers leading off that's their entire first inning. Every game, you got to go through Mookie and Freddie and Shohei, and you're like, I got to do this four times, five times a game. If they're six times a game, probably as good as they're going to be. It's a club that it's so well run, and it just seems like even the players that are risky that they finally get a chance to have become less risky. So like Tyler Glasnow at the top of the rotation, like, oh yeah, suddenly he's going to pitch 200 innings this year because they've got him as a Dodger now. Mm-hmm. Those kind of things that I'm just watching. It's like whatever, you know, pixie dust they've got that turns good players into superstars. They could be just an absolute juggernaut year this year. And so that's the team to beat. It's impossible not to be the team to beat when they've done what they've done. But yeah, it's a fun season for Reds fans finally. And I'm interested to see how well the young players mature. You know, I've got optimism about the longevity of their careers. Whether or not 2024 is when it all clicks or if it takes another year, I don't know because there's just not enough information to really say. But it could be this year. It really could be. And if it is, I'm excited for a fun summer of baseball for the first time in a while.
Yeah, I've got to look at their schedule and see who comes to town that I want to see because they are so close to me. We love going over to that ballpark. We have a lot of fun. So I promise my kids next year, next season, we're going to go to all the kind of drivable ballparks nearby that they haven't been to yet. Because, I mean, we go to Great American quite a bit, usually once or twice a summer at least. And they finally have been to PNC. Obviously, they go to Sox Park. But yeah, I was like, you know, we've got Kansas City, we've got St. Louis. They've been to Detroit. They really love Detroit. And then they've never been to Wrigley. So I was like, we've got like, I don't know, maybe four ballparks that are super close that we can make like a weekend trip. And
so I grew up in Lexington, Kentucky, just south of Cincinnati. And so was there for the bulk of my life. That's why I was a Reds fan. That's why I'm still a Reds fan. My dad and his entire family are still there. So they've been Reds fans forever. I'm in Denver now and have been for the last 12 years. I miss driving to ballparks so badly because I can drive to none of them. Yeah. Chase Field in Phoenix, I have been to, and it's about a 13-hour drive. That's it. That's the closest one. And so I miss so much being able to just book in a Wrigley trip and then head over to Cleveland and catch a game there. It's such a huge, huge perk of that part of the country. And I miss having access to that. So I'm happy to hear that you're getting out and doing that. Cause I miss that so badly in the summers.
Yeah. Well, my personal goal is to hit every stadium. I'm actually taking a trip, next month to West Coast. So I'm going to see a Mariners game. I'm going to catch a Giants game, and then I'm going to go to Oakland before the Coliseum is
where they're gone.
Because I had to do it. I was telling my husband, I was like, we have to go to Oakland this year. Like, time is running out, so we need to make that West Coast trip now. So, but yeah,
I've never been to the Coliseum. It's not on my scene list. I wish I had seen it, but I have not been there. I've been to Seattle and caught a game there back when it was Safeco, same stadium still. What wonderful, wonderful park if you catch it in the right weather conditions. It really is a beautiful area. I'm jealous. That sounds like a heck of a trip.
Yeah, it'll be fun, but like I said, I'm trying to hit them all. I'm about halfway, maybe a little over halfway done. And now I'm trying to go through it again with my kids. Because again, they haven't been to Cleveland, St. Louis, Kansas City, Wrigley, Milwaukee. Those are all the ones I mentioned that we can go to and then still catch a Reds game here and there.
That's great.
Trying to turn them into little, my son.
Baseball fans. Yeah.
My son is obsessed, almost as much as I am. He learned everything from me. My daughter just likes to go for the food.
So. Good ballpark foods. That's a perk. That's a big perk. That's an underrated perk. No doubt about it.
Yeah. So should be fun.
And like I said, I'm in Denver. If I'm going to a baseball game here, I'm going for the ballpark experience more than I am for the baseball itself. So I will 100% endorse that, because Coors Field is a great time. You're just not going to see a whole lot of really good baseball when you get there.
No, you've got Chris Bryant, but even Chris Bryant's not doing so hot.
Whew, yeah, they're in an interesting position right now.
Oh, those poor guys. All right, well, that's all I've got for you. I don't want to keep you too long. I'm sure you would love to catch up on some sleep. So just please.
Yeah, soon.
I'm just a teeny bit. Again, just let us know where we can find you.
Yeah, come read our stuff at redreporter.com. We generally get really up and rolling again in spring training and power ourselves all the way through the season. So we've got a couple new writers that I'm bringing on board, one of which has been there for a while and wasn't for a while, and I'm super, super excited to have him back. So we're working on exactly where we're going with our content going forward. But there will be stuff every single day there, covering the games, covering the young stars on the Reds. And I say young stars, hopefully they are young stars and not just young players. We'll find out more about that as the Red season goes on. You can catch us on Twitter at Reporter as well. Red Reporter fans on Facebook, where we also have a pretty lively community, even though I secretly try to do my best to stay out of that comment section. Come by, check us out and engage with us where you can, because we are hoping it's going to be a fun summer in the world of the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so very much for joining me again this season. Best of luck.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. Yeah. Hope for a good season, a good series, and a good healthy series this weekend, please.
Yes, please. No more injuries. All right. Goodbye.